Godfather, now playing.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we're going to talk about the mechanics of an election campaign with media strategist Adam Goodman. We'll look at the races for governor in the U.S. Senate here in Florida. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we opened the phone lines and talked about a variety of subjects. Here's what two listeners had to say.
The caller on your Thursday show echoed what I've heard a lot, including from liberals, that people can agree to disagree on a woman's right to abortion. And that is a very scary thing to say. And the idea that the government can outlaw a woman's right to decide if she wants to undergo the most painful, invasive thing that nature has put on her, which is to gestate a child and have it rip its way out from her body. To say that that's a minor issue that we can agree to disagree on, and that it isn't a break issue on which you can decide whether you're going to vote for a candidate or believe in a judge appointment, it's an absolutely crucial thing. So there's no gray area for abortion. If you're for it, you're for a woman having the right to prevent terrible pain.
My name is Bill. I was going to give you a suggestion. You asked about when the hate started growing. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, the hate groups multiplied about 8 times as soon as Obama was elected, and then it's been growing since Trump has been in there, since he's an open hate monger. So if you want to look up those sources, all right, thanks, bye.
Well, there you have a couple of listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Adam Goodman is a nationally prominent Republican media strategist and has made many appearances on Fox News. His clients have included John McCain's presidential campaign, Republican governor and Senate candidates in about a half dozen states, Attorney General Pam Bondi, and numerous Florida Republican congressional candidates. He worked for former Congressman David Jolly and former St. Petersburg Mayor Rick Baker, who tried to regain his job as mayor last year. Goodman is a teaching fellow in media and politics at the Murrow Center at Tufts University. He's worked for Democrats in nonpartisan races, including Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn. He also has a favorite candidate in the current governor's race. More about that in just a moment. Adam Goodman, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Always good to be with you, Rob.
Thanks for coming on. Let me ask you about the are elections decided on a rational decision, or do you think that elections are mostly decided based on emotion?
Well, the theory I've always believed in is we use our minds to justify our hearts, that voting ultimately starts with a feeling, and we find a way to intellectually, buttress it with the act of voting. So it is all emotional. It is what you feel. And it's more about what campaigns and candidates present that makes you believe in something, as opposed to something that you would find would check a lot of boxes and some kind of textbook lesson on democracy.
Could you give us an example where a candidate used feelings or emotion in a good way during a campaign?
Well, I can, even from the 2016 cycle, you could point to someone who didn't succeed. Though he overcame all sorts of expectations, that would be Bernie Sanders. I think Bernie Sanders helped fuel a political movement. This was an aging socialist Jewish Democrat from Vermont who was completely unknown to America. And then 1 year later, and $230 million raised almost entirely in small donations on the internet later, you saw what happens when people start to believe again. Now, I had a lot of issues with Bernie Sanders' Prescription for America, but it was fascinating to watch him grow and grow quickly as people saw something in him that they wanted to believe in themselves.
Hmm. I want to ask about focus groups. How important are focus groups? Like, for instance, are ads tested these days in front of focus groups before you let them out, before you put them on the air?
Well, it really depends. A lot, focus groups are not inexpensive, so it takes some of the better heeled campaigns that can do that. It's always helpful to kind of see people's kind of innate, immediate reaction to things that you want to talk about. Because I really think politics is at its best when it's at its most relevant. And the way to understand that is to be where the people are.
So only the well-heeled, well-funded campaigns can use a focus group to test whether an ad is going to be successful.
Well, there's some that are even doing this now, Rob, online, in cheaper ways. But I think it's less reliable, frankly. It's always nice to get 8 to 12 voters in a room and say, hey, if you knew this was a possibility, how would you feel? And then hear the not just the reactions, but how people express themselves in that reaction. And that gives you really a clue as to how to really be where people are or where you want them to be in terms of their aspirations as well as your own campaign.
If you had your choice, I mean, do you use focus groups when you run a campaign?
I do, the campaigns that have a little bit more resource. I really like hearing feedback. And I think candidates in particular profit from hearing feedback. It's not that they use focus groups to determine, oh, okay, now if I do A, B, C, and D, I'll get home in a big way and I'll win this campaign. It's more about, is the way I'm expressing myself resonating out there? And if not, what am I missing? And to me, that's probably one of the greatest training grounds that any candidate can have, hearing directly from the public that they are auditioning to serve.
Mm. What about social media? Is everything turning to social media and Facebook and Twitter? I mean, how important are social media outlets these days for a campaign?
I think they're critical. More and more people are turning to social media for news and information. And they're turning to social media to kind of get a reaffirmation of where they may be heading, not just in terms of votes and politics, but generally. And so it's made it really a 24/7 game. I mean, one of the biggest, I've been in this, at this, as you know, Rob, for a long time. So when they went from film to tape, that was a big breakthrough. When cable became a major factor in the broadcast universe, that became a big factor. But social media blows all those away because it's now become a 24/7 game, where if you go to sleep between the hours of 2 and 4, you wake up sometimes at 5, shocked that the world just shifted underneath your feet, and you have to tack again. Which is why, if there's one word to define what campaigns now need more than ever, it is the word speed. You have to move and move quickly, because the conversation in the world around you shifts quickly. And for those that are able to take advantage of that, understand and take advantage of that, they will profit in the new world. For those who are still reading out of the old political textbooks, they're going to find themselves soon unemployed and wondering why.
We're talking with Adam Goodman. He's a nationally prominent Republican media strategist. He's made many appearances on Fox News, and he's a teaching fellow in media and politics at the Murrow Center at Tufts University. And this is WMNF in Tampa. So is it possible to tailor ads specifically for an individual voter Facebook ads?
Oh, absolutely. Which makes it's both inspiring and debilitating, because it's inspiring that you can actually get to exactly where every voter is. It's debilitating because being able to produce and deliver that is not an easy task. And that's where I think the political field is still kind of playing catch-up ball. I mean, as much as we want to do that with repetition and success, it is still a relatively brand-new field. And what really works more than anything else, and maybe you can say, Rob, it's been that way for a long time, is creative visual material. When people see something, they tend to believe it. More than when they read it, when they hear about it, when they see something, seeing is believing, as they say. And the ability to break through the clutter of all the visual media that's now permeating our lives is daunting. I think, but on YouTube, there are, what is it, a million posts an hour or something dizzying like that. So for social media and digital media to be successful, for that to be a major part of a campaign that works, you have to be more creative now, I think, than ever before.
I want to ask you, there's a news story out today, and this story has been repeated several times over the last few years, that is that President Trump is hiring foreign workers for his Mar-a-Lago resort. And that's been reported in 2015 and 2016 and 2017. And the president's company says he can't find local workers to do the job. And this goes to the point of the Teflon nature of President Trump's presidency, that he talks about America first. He talks about hiring American workers. Yet, you know, if you look closely at what he does, he's not doing that. He's not hiring American workers. He employs people in factories overseas in China. And this came up, too, a few years ago when Alex Sink ran against Rick Scott for governor, and she tried to hit Rick Scott with this idea that his company had stolen money, had gotten ill-gotten gains from Medicare. And Alex Sink ran these ads against Rick Scott, saying that his company was responsible for Medicare fraud, and those didn't seem to have an impact. How does a candidate get to that Teflon point where, you know, people point things out about them that are contradictory, yet the voters just look past it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Going back on your example of Alex Sink hitting Rick Scott, the thing that saved Rick Scott was $70 million. out of his own wallet to try to fight off those charges. What the difference is today is that people are overwhelmed, I mean completely overwhelmed by information. And what normally would have been a news item that would have destroyed someone's reputation and career politically now just seems to be a bad day. So that story you're talking about with Donald Trump, which by the way is not unique to Donald Trump. I mean, a lot of people still need labor they can't find, which is why this entire argument about America first, as in let's keep immigrants out, let's make it harder for the dreamers to stay, is kind of preposterous because we still need, in terms of our labor pool, the kinds of help that people coming from abroad actually deliver. But what's underneath it all, Rob, what's actually underneath it all, and I think it's obvious to most that are listening to us, is immigration is really code for control, that we feel more and more we're losing control, not just in our lives, but maybe in terms of the nation's direction. And immigration has become a convenient place for people to vest that insecurity. And so it doesn't add up, in my opinion. It doesn't add up. I think we need better immigration laws, frankly. I think we need secure borders. But all this ranting and raving about the perils of immigration, the downsides of immigration, defies the very thing that made this country great. And I think we have to wake up before it's too late.
So if Rick Scott had $70 million that he could spend to go after these Medicare fraud allegations, how does he do it? How do you fix that problem if that maybe is creating a problem for your candidacy?
Well, it created a major problem for his candidacy. And he was lucky to survive it, frankly. But today, that's just a bad news story. I know it sounds terrible, but I think we've gotten to the point where there are so many things flying at us so quickly that to internalize that as the one and only issue that would be defining, it would be the ultimate reason why you vote for or against a candidate, is giving way to a new reality. And frankly, whether we like this or not, that is what we're seeing from President Trump. President Trump is like, I call him like the circus leader, whatever they did, the person in the middle of the ring.
The ringleader.
Ringleader, thank you. And he is masterfully keeping all three rings in the circus going at the same time. So if he's having a problem over in one ring, he gets everyone else to look at another. If a lion escaped from a cage in ring one, he's talking about the clowns in ring three. And because of all the stuff that's coming at the audience so quickly and simultaneously, it's very difficult to digest any one thing fully. And I think, again, as I said, for better and worse, the president is an absolute master at that.
We're talking with Adam Goodman, a nationally prominent Republican media strategist. He's a graduate of Haverford College. He lives right here in the Tampa Bay area. He's had numerous clients, including a David Jolly, Rick Baker, and Catherine Harris, too. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. So, to this point about Donald Trump, President Trump has endorsed Rick DeSantis in the Republican primary for governor. Rick DeSantis, I think it's fair to say, is a darling of Fox News. How important are both those things to Rick DeSantis? Does he have a chance to win the Republican nomination for governor?
I think Ron DeSantis is going to be the nominee of the Republican Party, and for two reasons. One is that Donald Trump has solidified the Republican base, unlike anything I've seen in a long time. He has solidified the base, and the base knows now, and is starting, and will know even more as they move ahead in the last 7 weeks of the primary, that Ron DeSantis is the one that Donald Trump wants. And that is, in my opinion, worth 10 to 15 points in the Republican primary, that alone. And then the fact that he's done so well and has been so frequently featured on Fox News is just, you know, kind of icing on the cake. He fits in terms of the ideology of the party. He fits in terms of the pro-Trump, you know, intensity in the base. And I think the biggest problem that Adam Putnam has, and who looks very, very good on paper, by the way, as a potential Republican nominee, is Adam Putnam occupies the conventional lane of politics. He really is more of the conventional politician doing this in more conventional fashion, as opposed to Ron DeSantis, who, as you might say, is an invention of the modern campaign world, and I think will fare far better.
Republican turnout in that race is probably, and in the Democratic race in the primary for governor, 20 to 25%. So you really don't need that many votes statewide to win that primary.
You don't. And I think, you know, when you come to off year elections, Rob, the biggest word we tend to focus on in the profession is the word intensity. What is the intensity or the possible intensity of the vote for one candidate over another? And President Trump inspires a lot of intensity on the Republican side. On the Democrat side, he does the same, of course, but in reverse. And I think that's a far more wide-open contest, as Democrats will soon come to the polls to decide who their champion is going to be, not just to take on a Republican nominee, but for all intents and purposes to stand up to the President of the United States.
I want to ask you about the Democratic race in just a second, but real quickly, one more question about the Republican race, and that is, you know, the people who are listening right now are probably saying Adam Putnam's been, you know, wanting the governorship for years and years. He's got an organization in all 67 counties. It's too late for Ron DeSantis to mount an insurgency and win the Republican nomination. That had he started earlier, he might have been able to do it. But, you know, voting is going to start in a month. So what do you say to those people that might object to your prediction?
Well, remember years ago how they fomented a revolution in Egypt in 8 days on the internet. I mean, these things move and move quickly. And my response to that is, in the Republican primary, the polling has consistently showed 30 to 40% undecided. If Republicans are not yet locked in behind Adam Putnam, after Adam Putnam's been on the scene for so many years, after all the millions and millions of dollars of ads, et cetera, they're not locked in yet. They're looking for something else. And I think the Trump factor is so visceral right now that's the X factor that Adam Putnam hoped he never had to be on the wrong side of, but now finds himself having to fight. And all Adam Putnam can really say, Rob, is, you know, you can use the words like Trump, I believe we should have stronger immigration laws. Like Trump, I think we should have fair trade. But he is not Trump's pick, and I think Trump's pick is going to be hard to beat.
That's amazing. Just moving over to the Democratic side, Adam, you're a Republican. Are you working for Levine for governor?
I am one of Philip Levine's best friends, and I'm doing everything I can to advise him on how to move forward, but I'm not technically a part of the campaign.
Okay, all right. So just as in the Republican Party, there's a lot of undecideds in the Democratic Party. I think the persuadable number, there's a number called persuadable, that is, who's willing to change their mind. On the Republican side, it's 60% of Republican voters who've made up their mind are persuadable. They might be convinced to vote for somebody else. And then on the Democratic side, I think the number is 65%. But Phil Levine is ahead in all the polls that we've seen recently. Make the case for us. Why could Phil Levine win statewide?
Well, Phil Levine is a progressive, and he's someone who has shown success in both the public and private sectors. The $500 and an investment as a young guy developed a business within the cruise industry that became fabulously successful, and then years later became mayor of Miami Beach and has now become an acclaimed international champion of climate change. He fought for bans of assault rifles, the first living wage. He's now on the court fighting for that for the state of Florida. The reason he is an interesting play for the Democrats is he's a modern candidate. He is someone that was discovered by people as opposed to proclaimed by the insiders. And I think for that reason, he's got a heck of a shot of being the nominee, but also would give Republicans all they could handle. This is someone that is pro-people and pro-business, someone that has had a tremendously successful track record and is incredibly good on his feet, which is not something that you can minimize in a world where communication still reigns.
Where do you think that election is going to be won? Because Phil Levine, I think people know him in South Florida and Southeast Florida, but he was just the mayor of Miami Beach, not the mayor of Miami. But where do you think the real battleground is going to be in the race for governor this year? And I'm talking about the general election.
As it always is, right, Rob? It's the I-4 corridor. The I-4 corridor is still moving with the winds of change. Like over in Orlando, for instance, you know, with the influx of so many people from Puerto Rico and the increasing diversity of the demographics there, it's a far different community than it was 4 years ago, but it's a total swing community. And over in Tampa Bay, you see, especially in Pinellas and Hillsborough, they're going to go with what feels right at the moment, as opposed to what, you know, years past when party ID, when party labels meant a lot more.
Which fires people up more, the love for President Trump or the hatred of President Trump? Which is more motivating in a general election?
Both. I mean, the simple answer is both. This is a referendum. Usually the midterms are a referendum on the party in the White House. And I say that even if it's a local race, because our conversation in America today has become so nationalized, it's getting harder and harder, frankly, to talk about, say, a state issue in Florida, like what are we going to do to fight the algae blooms over in the St. Lucie Basin, or what are we going to do to create more opportunity in rural Florida. It's really become more a conversation about what people are talking about nationally. For that reason, 2018 in Florida is going to be a referendum on what is. And what is, for most people, is President Donald Trump.
Are you saying that every race from the governor on down through the cabinet positions to the state Senate, state House, everybody's going to be asked their position about Trump, and that's going to be the deciding factor for voters?
I think everyone will be asked their position. I don't think it's the only deciding factor, but it is a major league factor now. And, of course, with the news of the retirement on the Supreme Court, and the idea that the next nominee is going to have tremendous influence in moving the court one way or the other, the stakes have just increased all over again about who controls Congress, who controls the Senate. And that goes downstream, Rob. Even though someone running for, say, you know, state Senate in Tampa Bay, you ask, well, what does that have to do with Washington? What does that have to do with President Trump? It has to do with, you know, people kind of lining up. And that's also, by the way, better and worse. I wish we were less tribal these days and more united around the one thing I thought that is most special to all of us, and that's being American, as opposed to I'm a Democrat. Well, if I'm a Democrat, then, you know, half the world loves me and half the world hates me. If I'm a Republican, half the world loves me, half the world hates me. It's just a very difficult environment, even for local campaigns, to pierce through without it having a measurable impact on their political fortunes.
So it's going to be a referendum on Trump.
I think it's largely going to be a referendum on Trump. And the challenge that Republicans have, as you know, is historically in the midterms, the party in the White House loses on average about 25 seats. Right now, 23-seat change in favor of Democrats would throw the House to the Democratic Party. That is in normal times. If the president's approval rating is at or below 50%, you're probably looking at a number closer to 30 to 35 seats. So that now has put focus on the U.S. Senate, but the Democrats have to fight for control of a lot more seats, a lot more seats than Republicans. That's going to be a closer affair. But it is a referendum, a midterm, you might say, judgment on how we as Americans or we as Floridians feel about the way things are going. Mm. And we're gonna let it be known in November.
And President Trump won Florida by about 113,000 votes. But in the off-year elections, in the midterm elections, Democrats typically don't come out to vote in as big numbers as Republicans. So,
well, I'll tell you, you mentioned in the intro, Rick Baker in St. Petersburg. Rick Baker's biggest challenge in St. Petersburg was a massive influx of voters on the Democratic side that none of the pollsters seemed to fully pick up until, for Rick Baker, it was obviously too late. I think the passion right now in the midterm belongs to the Democrats. It just does. And the Supreme Court situation does help a little bit to juice up some of the interest among the more ideological parts of the Republican base. But this is still one that you would say on paper is the Democrats' year. After 24 years of not having the governor's mansion, this is the year if it's going to be a year. But then again, politics is a funny thing. And if President Trump has good fortune in the fall of 2018, they will have more to do, Rob, with who prevails or not than anything else we're now talking about.
Well, Adam Goodman, thanks for spending so much time with us. Great to have you on WMNF.
My pleasure as always, Rob.
All right. Thanks, Adam. Take care. Bye-bye. That's Adam Goodman with the Victory Group in Tampa. He's a nationally prominent Republican media strategist, and he's appeared many times on Fox News. He's also a teaching fellow in media and politics at the Murrow Center at Tufts University. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to read just a few of the stories that are on the wire today. First of all, a 16-year-old boy in Tampa was killed in a fireworks explosion overnight last night. The incident occurred on East Osborne Avenue in Tampa. The teen was reportedly holding a mortar firing tube and attempting to launch it when it accidentally exploded, resulting in injuries to his hand and to his chest. The only Democrat in the state Senate District 24 race in Pinellas County has dropped out. Carrie Pilon issued a press release this morning saying that she's withdrawing from the race for personal reasons. Pilon says that a close family member is experiencing some serious and unexpected health problems and that these issues have made it impossible to continue with the campaign. State Senate District 24 includes most of Pinellas County except for South St. Pete. The district is currently represented by Republican Jeff Brandis, who's running for re-election. And one of President Trump's properties is seeking to hire more temporary foreign workers. The Tampa Bay Times is reporting that President Trump's Palm Beach Resort is seeking 40 waiters to start work in October, continuing a reliance on cheap labor while the president pushes his America First policies. He's applying for an H-2B visa and said workers would be paid $12.68 an hour minimum, with overtime possible at $19 an hour. Trump has hired hundreds of foreign workers over the years and has done so at his other clubs. And some non-citizen members of the U.S. Army and Army Reserve are telling the Associated Press that they've been abruptly discharged from the military. Some were not given an explanation. Others were told that they've been labeled as a security risk because they have relatives abroad. About 10,000 non-citizen immigrants are currently serving in the Army in the U.S. Well, let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. And just one more story. Research suggests that the family of Anne Frank, the world-famous Jewish diary keeper who died in the Holocaust, attempted to immigrate to the U.S. and later also tried to immigrate to Cuba. But the family, their efforts were thwarted by America's restrictive immigration policies at the time. The Anne Frank House in Amsterdam said today documents indicate that Anne's father, Otto, tried twice to get his family the needed papers to go to the U.S., and later also appears to have applied for a visa to Cuba. The Frank family's escape efforts were in vain, and the family eventually went into hiding in Amsterdam on July 6, 1942, exactly 76 years ago. They were ultimately deported to Auschwitz. Only Otto Frank survived. Let's take some phone calls, 813-239-9663, and I'll read some of these emails. Tommy writes this, Donald Trump says Putin is KGB and this and that. Putin's fine. He's fine. We're all fine. He's people. We're people. Yet he refers to immigrants as animals. Who are the real animals in this picture, writes Tommy. Mark writes this, good morning, Rob. This is awesome. Thanks for having this man on. We are learning so much, writes Mark. And David writes this about Ron DeSantis, says, DeSantis is a disaster. Please, Republicans, don't allow DeSantis to become governor of Florida. I was very disappointed to learn that the incoming Florida Speaker of the House, a guy named Jose Oliva, has endorsed DeSantis. Let's change his name to DeCantis. And Putnam is a much better alternative, although he dislikes liberal elites like me, writes David. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And if you want to comment about anything that's been mentioned so far, let us know. We're going to go to Daryl in Tampa. Hi, Daryl, you're on WMNF. What's on your mind?
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
I'm good.
I was kind of late coming into your program today, but I was wondering, has anybody mentioned anything, or does WMNF have any plans on having Gwen Graham to speak to the public?
You know, I've met Gwen Graham, and we've talked a little bit, but so far her campaign has not reached out to us. I'm sure in the next few weeks we're likely to hear from that campaign. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to try to invite all the candidates, including Graham. We've had a bunch of the candidates on the air already, including King and Gillum and Levine. They've all been on a bunch of times.
And you said so far in the polling, who looks like they're ahead in the race for governor?
Well, on the Democratic side, it's Levine first, and then Gwen Graham second, and then the other three candidates further down. On the Republican side, it's Adam Putnam first and Ron DeSantis second. But keep in mind that that poll was taken the early part of June. And there has not been a poll taken since the Republican debate last week, last Thursday. So I suspect that things might have changed a little bit since that debate last Thursday.
I'll just say quickly, I think I think it will be a referendum on Donald Trump. And for me, it's health care. Well, that's our primary issue in my for me personally, in my camp. And I know for a lot of people, it's health care. He promised us affordable, cheap health care. Where is it? And you can't say, well, the Democrats have blocked me. All you've tried to do is to make the affordable health care die on the vine, kill it as far as, like, its funding. And he's done that. But are you really surprised that he's using immigrant workers in his resort in Mar-a-Lago, and then wasn't this the same resort that recently came up with 47 health code violations, I believe?
Yeah, I think they had some kitchen problems.
Have a good weekend.
All right, Daryl, thanks a lot. You too. 813-239-9663 is the phone number to call, and here's an email. I think it's unsigned, and the email says, I'm surprised by how many injuries and how much property damage occurred locally due to celebratory gunfire. Yeah, in Tampa alone, there were three incidents where one guy was hit at Busch Gardens from a gunshot from outside the park, and then two people had private property injured by people shooting guns into the air on July 4th. I don't know if it happened in your neighborhood, if you're in Sarasota or Bradenton or St. Petersburg or Clearwater or Lakeland, whether it happened to you in Brooksville or if you know it happened But if you've got a report of being hit by celebratory gunfire, maybe a neighbor was hit, maybe their property, let us know. 813-239-9663 is the phone number. And we're going to go back to the phones, and let's go to Mike in Tampa. Mike, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I was interested in that article you mentioned about Trump hiring aliens. Was that in today's paper?
No, it's brand new news. It's on the Tampa Bay Times website this morning.
Oh, but it's on the paper.
I don't think it's in the paper yet because it just broke this morning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are there any third-party candidates running for governor?
I think there are some third-party candidates. I haven't been on the Secretary of State's website in a few weeks, so I haven't looked it up. I might be able to look it up right now, but yeah, there are some third-party candidates. There's you know, there's a bunch of people, I think, that in fact, we had one of those candidates on. We had the Libertarian Party candidate on about 6 months ago, and so there is a Libertarian candidate running for governor of Florida. And that was a show that we did at the end of last year.
But you don't have any of the names of the others.
Yeah, Mike, it's easy to look up, and when I get a second here on the show, I'll look it up for you. And it's probably a long list. There's probably probably more than just one or two.
Okay.
Okay,
well,
Mike.
Thank you. Do you have any numbers on the poll on Levine and Graham?
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's something like 17 or 18% for Levine, something like 13% for Graham. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but a huge number of Democrats are still undecided.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Anas, is that right? Anas in Tampa?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Anas. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good morning. I just want to make a quick reference to the foreign policy. We are forgetting that when you refer to the Nazis in the 1940s and their atrocities and crimes, we're witnessing the same thing right now, right this minute in Syria. Putin is a war criminal. And I'm sorry to use this word, but this is true. Just the past 2 weeks, the Russian airplanes displaced more than 300,000 civilians out of their homes in Syria, in the southern border, Syrian-Jordanian borders, just because they want to give Assad, who is another war criminal, more power over his civilian people and population so that he can continue his 4 years ruthless regime. Now, if he's going to meet with Putin, I understand foreign policies, complications and whatnot, but where is the United States stance on freedom, democracy, and human rights? Since after the Second World War that a U.S. sitting U.S. president did not meet with a foreign president or government, head of government, and did not refer to those issues. It's another Holocaust happening right this minute in Syria, and nobody seems to bring this as a crisis. I mean, it's so sad to hear about Anne Frank's family and suffering and death at Auschwitz, but we cannot do anything right this minute about what happened 7 years ago. But what is it our duty, moral duty as an Americans, as Americans and as a U.S. government to do and to bring to the world attention what is happening in Syria right this minute?
And Nas, do you have family in Syria?
I do. And
tell us what they're going through. Tell us what they're experiencing.
That they're basically the ones inside Syria. They cannot say a single word in public or in private about President Assad because they'll be taken to basically Auschwitz-like jails and concentration camps. there is, according to one UN report, more than 200,000 prisoners right now in jails in Syria. And we all know the Caesar report that showed faces of 50,000 dead detainees in one prison alone. Now, the ones outside Syria are refugees. They're basically just struggling to live day to day. The ones inside Syria, they're basically barely surviving. It's a genocide. It's a Holocaust by all means. You know, if you do not, and I mean 100% obey the government, whatever they ask you to do, you're basically sentenced to death. Over there, whether a slow death or immediate execution.
All right, Anas, tell us where's a good source of information, quality information that's truthful about Syria. Where would you go? Where would you advise our listeners go to find quality information about Syria?
I mean, honestly speaking, I watch the news. I listen to NPR and PBS, and this is the quality, reliable source of information. I understand there's a lot of confusion. There is a media campaign that was done by the Russian government, by the Syrian government, but the basic truth stands. There is the people that have been oppressed for 40 years. They rose. They went to peaceful demonstration. The government cracked down on them. They picked up arms, and then they got infiltrated by criminals, by outlaws that were already in jails. In Syrian government prison jails, they released all the criminals, and they armed them, and they said, listen, we're not handling a popular uprising. We are handling basically bandits and militias and terrorists, and that's not the case. And now in southern Syria, there is no presence of ISIS whatsoever. There is no presence of Al-Qaeda whatsoever. However, the Syrian government and the Russian government both are accomplices to exterminate any resistance or any voices that do not 100% obey the President Assad. Basically, Kim Jong-un incarnated. This is what Assad and Putin.
When President Trump goes over to meet with President Putin in a few days, what would you have President Trump say to President Putin about Syria? What would you want President Trump to say?
They had an agreement, United States and the Russian government and Turkey, I think, and had an agreement of de-escalation zones. The southern part of Syria was part of this de-escalation zone. Russia broke the agreement unilaterally, not provoked, not even provoked. They broke the agreement unilaterally. They should be told firmly by the United States government that they should abide by the agreement and go back into the de-escalation zone and allow civilians to go back to their homes, not just indiscriminately carpet bombing everybody in order to empower Assad more and more and basically give him all the power that he already had. And now his power is increasing, and I think we're looking at another 50 years of Assad family rule.
Okay. Anas, thanks a lot. Thank you for the phone call.
Thank you for taking my phone.
All right, thanks. All right, so there you go. Now, Peggy writes, she suggests going to the Independent in London, the Independent newspaper in England, for information about what's going on in Syria. You might also find some good information on the BBC and Al Jazeera. Mike, a few minutes ago, asked me how many candidates were running for governor, and I went to the Department of the Secretary of State in Tallahassee, went to their website, which is real easy to find. And by my count, there's 26 people running for governor, 26 different people running for governor. And I'm not going to read their names, but you can go to the website and look. And Mike, if you can, get to a library and take a look at the website and see all the people running for governor. There's lots and lots of people running for governor of Florida. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Bill in St. Pete says, I'm all in with Gwen Graham. It's the year of women, writes Bill in St. Pete. And Tommy writes this, why is every gun not fired before time of purchase to get the ballistic fingerprint of that gun so every random bullet could be easily traced back to the gun it came from, writes Tommy. Tommy, that's brilliant. We've often talked about that here on WMNF. It's a great idea. Every gun should be fingerprinted, so to speak. I agree with that because we want to be able to trace these guns back when there's a random shooting and some innocent person is hit. That's absolutely right. Let's go to Andrew in St. Pete. Hi, Andrew. You're on. What's on your mind today?
Oh, two comments. First comment was on more information about Syria. AlJazeera.com, the English edition, has a lot of information about Syria and what's going on down there, especially in the southern border. Another thing, and this has got to do with the Democrat campaign. I started receiving mail from Jeff Green. I don't know anything about him other than that he's got a lot of money. And he threw his head into the ring just recently. Is there any more information about him?
I think the Tampa Bay Times has covered him a lot. He ran for U.S. Senate a few years ago, ran for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate and didn't get it. But he is a billionaire, as you see in his ads. He stands up to President Trump. Let me ask you this. One of the reasons President Trump won was that his supporters saw him as somebody who had a backbone that didn't back down. That seems to be the way that Jeff Green is campaigning, a guy with a backbone who doesn't back down. It seems that maybe some Democrats want somebody to start standing up to Trump and showing some moxie. What do you think about that as a strategy? Would you vote for the person that, if this coming November 18 race is a referendum on Trump, do you want the Democrats to have a backbone? Would that sway you to vote for a Democrat?
I'm definitely tired of seeing people like Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer back off when it called about civility. I think the Democrats need more of a backbone. Yeah, I've been a Democrat all my life, but I'm pretty disgusted with the mainstream Democrats. I have been for many years now, even though I vote for them, because I fear the alternative. I've been disgusted with them for a long time.
All right, Andrew, thanks a lot. Jeff Green has not reached out to us for an interview, but if he does, we will put him on the air to do an interview
like
with him.
On local issues, you know, the sugar and healthcare and stuff like that.
Yeah, Andrew, what is the number one issue for you here in Florida? What do you think?
I'm sorry.
What's the number one Florida issue for you?
Right now, I think it's healthcare. Second one is the environment. We don't see it so much up here, but I read a lot about South Florida, and I'm really upset about that.
Andrew, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
All right. And Patty Perkey and Frank Knox are our phone producers today. John writes this. He said, I recently switched from no party affiliate to Democrat to support Andrew Gillum. I learned for Florida 15. And I suggest independents in Temple Terrace, the Notasassa, Brandon, and Lakeland do the same. We cannot sit on the sidelines as this is an open house seat up for grabs. Andrew Learned. He's not talking about Gillum. All right, Learned is the guy running for Congress. Thank you. In the Florida Congressional District 15. Now I got it. John goes on to write, we cannot sit on the sidelines as this is an open house seat up for grabs. Andrew Learned was a naval officer and has campaigned in the district over the last year, even though he was originally taking on Dennis Ross. He looks like he could actually win in a general election in this purple house district. His opponents filed late on the last day and is being pushed by Emily's List out of state donors, but we need to decide our House district locally. Independents need to switch by July 29th to vote in the primary. It was easy on the Supervisor of Elections website. That's John's email. John, thanks for that. House district, this is a Congressional House District 15, is up for grabs. Dennis Ross, the longtime congressman from that district, has stepped down. And now a bunch of people on the Democratic side and the Republican side are running for that seat. Sean Kinnan just a few weeks ago played some audio from a debate that most of the candidates did. Very interesting debate. So, an open seat is easier to win than beating an incumbent. If an incumbent's in that seat, it's very hard to win that seat usually. But an open seat is much easier to win. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Tina in Tampa. Hi, Tina. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. Thanks for talking about the governor's race and mentioning Jeff Green. Now, I started to like him, but only based, again, I want to emphasize, only based on what he says in his advertising. I haven't done a lot of independent research. I haven't seen much coverage about him in the papers or on TV. But I like what he says. He sounds very progressive. And I think that, you know, we've got all these wealthy right-wing people getting into government and you know, creating a lot of changes that really are not, you know, in my opinion, pro-worker. Why not have a wealthy person who's got, as you said, a backbone, or he says a backbone, work for us, work for the people, we the people. Why not? Anything wrong with that? I think he sounds, you know, I'd like to hear more from him, but I think that in a race where, to be honest with you, I'm not crazy about any of them.
About the current candidates running for governor.
Yeah. The Democratic slate. Well, I'm not a Republican, so I'm not going to vote in the Republican race. But I thought, maybe voting for Gwen Graham, I was kind of, leaning that way. And then, you know, really, the more I read about her, I'm not so sure she knows quite really where she stands on everything. I just don't have a real good sense from her. And then I read a couple of stories in the Tampa Bay Times, a little more on Levine, and it was just a turnoff. You know how he was as mayor of Miami. I was more turned off by his kind of, he was kind of bullying the way they were describing him. We don't need any more of that. But I think that we need a strong Democratic governor in this state who's going to be geared toward, protecting the environment, doing something for education. They've lost so much ground. And thinking about, the people, the workers.
And Tina, it's a fine line, I think, between bullying and having a backbone, too. I mean, you want somebody who, I think everybody, whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, independent, whether you're a Democratic socialist or right. Green.
I'm
or
having
whatever,
a little trouble hearing you.
I think a lot of people want a candidate with a backbone, and it's a fine line between bullying and having a backbone. What some people see as bullying might just simply be a candidate, who has principles and stands for them.
Well, I agree with you. I would not want to see a Trump type person elected in this state. I guess what I mean by backbone is someone who would push the legislature toward doing the right thing, not being afraid to speak out. It seems like so many in the Democratic field, they're just kind of vote for me, and then they just attack each other. It's the primary. They're going to do that. But you don't really hear a whole lot of what I'm going to do. Levine, we get all these ads with his mother, saying what a great son he is. And then Gwen Graham, I'm just...
Okay.
Just because she's a woman, that's just not a reason to vote for her. Okay. I mean, it's a good, attribute, but that's not going to get my vote.
Tina, thanks a lot. Thanks, we're almost out of time. All right,
bye.
Great to hear from you. And David writes this, here's a person, a Democrat with a backbone. His name is Richard Ojeda, and he's from West Virginia. Yeah, I've read about Richard Ojeda, and Ojeda is spelled O-J-E-D-A. Mexican-American guy, military vet, got injured when he was attacked domestically a few years ago, bounced back. So, yeah, look up that guy if you haven't read about him yet. Richard Ojeda, a West Virginia politician, O-J-E-D-A. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This is WMNF Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Now stay tuned for the news, and Daniel Ruth will be along in just 5 minutes.